side. Yep. While the committee is getting around to organizing its business, I want to ask anybody in the audience that wants to testify on Senate Bill 310 relating to the SAFE Corporation to please sign up on the witness registration form near the door. In about 5 or 6 minutes, I'm going to pick that up, and then we'll know how many people are going to testify, and I'll allot the time accordingly. First thing I want to do is talk about, under the organizational meeting, adopting committee rules. And I'm going to ask Judith for a few comments on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. You have before you a copy of the model Senate committee rules. Nothing has changed. We're changed in the rules, in the model rules, in the document set before you. I just wanted to point out a few things that are different from kind of previous sessions as far as the committee rules go. In this instance, a quorum of the committee will be 3 members, will form a majority. And I wanted to point out the deal on the 48-hour notice. We will be posting our agendas with at least 48 hours public notice. If items need to be carried over to the next scheduled meeting, we will be allowed to do that. If the measure had originally gotten at least a 48-hour public notice, the measure can be carried over to the same type of meeting. In other words, if it was a public hearing scheduled initially, then only a public hearing can be scheduled in a carryover situation. The chair will announce in committee his intent to schedule a carryover measure at the next meeting, and we as staff will post that revised agenda only with respect to carryover notices as soon as possible after that hearing. And the rest is how you've operated previously in committee. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Are there any questions about the committee rules? Do I need a motion?
Yes.
Can I have a motion?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did he open his work?
I think the vice chair does that, but I'll do it. Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the committee rules for the Senate General Government Committee.
Is there any discussion? If there's not any discussion, how about just without objection? Without objection, those are the rules that we have then. Wanted to look over the work plan just briefly. I think everybody has a copy of it. There, on the work plan, there are issue areas assigned to us by the president. There's issue areas requested but assigned to other committees. And I know there's going to be some debate about that. Senator Walker doesn't have a copy.
Yeah,
I didn't pass that out just
okay.
Because our submitted work plan was not exactly approved as we had submitted.
Yeah, we submitted a work plan and it wasn't approved totally as I had requested it.
Oh.
But what we do have is agency organization and structure generally, public contracting, military and veterans affairs, emergency preparedness, liquor control, housing, faith-based community organizations, sexual orientation discrimination, SAFE Corporation, and the ever-familiar other bills as assigned. There might be some comments by some of you who thought that other things might be a part of the committee. Then again, there might not be some comments about that. Go ahead, Senator George. Did you have some comment you wanted to make?
No.
No? Okay.
Was it because of me being here?
Mm-hmm. I just want you to know.
About that?
You can ask about that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
I'm recognizing Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about that work plan. I'm just now seeing it, and it was my understanding this committee was going to be dealing with a broad range of workers' compensation issues that we've been working on all interim. as well as SAFE, which, you know, we all know SAFE is just a smidgen of that whole array of issues. So could you maybe speak to whether those would come under other bills as assigned?
I guess I would respond by saying we get to work on the smidgen. I know that Senator Starr and you, Senator Walker, and myself worked on a broad array of workers' comp bills during the interim. We pre-session filed bills, but it is not in our purview to determine what all gets assigned to this committee. I'm trying to be a good soldier and take what I am given. I think that there can be some more discussion on that.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that comment, Mr. Chair. I can tell you that if those bills don't get assigned to this committee, I'll be spending a lot of time in the other committee because I have a great number of bills that have yet to be dropped that are still being drafted, and it's unfortunate, but I guess we'll talk about that later.
That was very nicely handled. Thank you. Are there any other comments on... I'm not going to read the whole list of other things that we'd ask for, but there may be some other bills assigned to the committee. Any other comments about the work plan that's in front of us? Okay. What I need to do next is to move into a possible work session. Our work session. We have some...
A work session?
Yes. Just to introduce some potential committee bills. That's what you were just handed. There's three of them in front of you. I'm going to ask Judith if she'd like to comment briefly. We might call up a few people from the audience to comment on a few of these as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. You have three LC drafts before you for your consideration as introduction of committee measures. LC 63 has to do with semi-independent agencies. There are nine of them currently, and it would allow them to borrow funds. Mr. Fred Van Atta brought this to the committee for consideration as an introduction of a committee bill. He also brought the next one, LC 64, which deals with the Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board. They have the ability under current law to conduct nationwide criminal records checks, except that they don't have the authority to fingerprint in order to make that happen. And it's my understanding from Mr. Van Atta that this would allow them the authority to provide those fingerprints to the FBI for such a nationwide background check.
Before you go any farther, are there any questions that you would have for which you'd like to ask Fred Van Atta to come forward? If that's not necessary, we won't do it and we'll move on. I mean, well, I'm planning on asking for approval of all these at once. Is that okay?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it would be my preference that we just approve them all and then
right.
You as the committee chair decide which ones we're going to be hearing.
Okay.
And we can take testimony.
Okay. Go with the other one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The last one you're looking at there is LC 1664. This is the one that actually the interim committee had asked to be drafted, and it basically codifies what the MLAC recommendations were for permanent total disability benefits, and it's their recommendations that are embodied in this LC draft.
And do you want any more information? John Schultz is sitting out there if you want any more information on this one.
No, other than Mr. Chair, we probably won't be seeing this one.
It doesn't stop us from pre-session filing it, does it?
No, sure, we'll do their work.
Well, we did for an interim. Okay.
Let's see. Can you move the three bills?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I move drafts number LC 63, 64, LC 1664 be introduced as committee bills.
Okay. So, Senator George has moved LC draft 63, 64, and The other one is 1664 to be introduced as committee bills. Any discussion? Can we do this? Okay. So, without objection, those committee bills are introduced. And with that, we can close the work session, right?
Correct.
Now, this has given everybody time to sign up over there if they want to testify on the bill. If nobody has, if there's anybody that wants to testify on Senate Bill 310, please get over there and sign up right away, immediately, if not sooner, in fact. And with that, I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 310. And as soon as Judith gets back here, she's going to set a little bit of context for us. Yes, and if somebody else comes in and signs up. Let me rewind the tape. I'm maybe getting in too much of a hurry here. I should ask Judith to introduce our committee assistant. I'm getting ahead of myself. Everybody knows Judith Callen. I should be a nice guy and welcome all of you to the committee. I'm a little out of my element. Part of my brain is still back in Western Pennsylvania, where we did a funeral for my father on the first day of this committee's scheduled hearings. So I'm kind of not with it, but I do want to welcome you all. I'm glad you're here. Thank you. Judith, you've always done great work. That's why I made sure we stole you for another session. Would you please introduce a new committee assistant who I've just met myself?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. Gary Roulier has actually been a session assistant in previous sessions, so he is experienced. And we will have his services through early February, when he will be called to serve our great country. And so he will be with us for a short while here, and then we will wish him well and safety and off to his other duties. Gary is being called up because he provides excellent training to our troops to avoid non-combat losses, and he'll be assigned to Guantanamo Bay, isn't that right? Just found out very recently.
When?
Last Tuesday. This morning.
And, so just when you think you've put it all together.
Yes.
Then somebody comes along and takes it apart for you. So,
right.
We're sorry we'll be losing you so quickly. When I met you last week briefly, I thought we had all of our committee put together, and this, I assume, is National Guard stuff, right?
Correct.
Well, Gary, welcome to the committee. We're glad you're here. We'll have a party before we let you go. Okay. I apologize for missing a few on this whole thing. We've only had a couple people that have signed up so far. Two of my favorite combatants in the whole safe joust. Yeah, we could just start with something like, in this corner we've got Brenda Rocklin, and over in this corner we've got John DiLorenzo, and let them go at it. But I think we use a little better tactic than that. And actually, for spice, anybody else who wants to sign up, we did put a new sheet back there. But otherwise, we could go for an hour with these two fighting with one another. Brenda, do the two of you just want to arm wrestle and be done with it? I mean, it could be embarrassing to a lawyer. I mean, you know. Both lawyers, yeah. Brenda, I'm going to ask you to start. I mean, John cannot argue with that. With that, I'm going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 310. I do want to thank you, Brenda, for coming. As the testimony is being handed out, I would ask that you kind of give us an overview of the rationale that led you to bring this to us during the interim, and just be candid in your comments about where you see the crunch points and so on and so forth. Okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Brenda Rockland, the interim president and CEO of Safe Corporation. I've held that position, as the committee knows, since August 13th of last year. With me today is Chris Davey, who is the Government Affairs Director for Safe Corporation. We are testifying today in support of Senate Bill 310. We appreciate the opportunity to be here today. The way Chris and I would like to go through the testimony today would be to give the committee a very brief background on Safe Corporation in terms of how that relates to Senate Bill 310, since this is our first appearance before the committee. And then we'd like to talk briefly about the background leading up to Senate Bill 310 and the committee's principles that were adopted earlier last year. And finally, then I'd like to go through the various sections of the bill with the committee and answer any questions you may have. And I think appropriately, with the chair's suggestion, talk about where I think the controversy may be and maybe where it's not. So with that, I'll turn to Chris, and then we'll go through the bill.
Chair Shields, committee members, I'm Chris Davey of Safe Corporation. And we would just briefly like to give a little background on SAFE. This is our first appearance before this committee, and although I see experienced senators in front of me, there are often questions about what SAFE is and how it fits into the overall picture of the workers' compensation system. So just to give you a little background, SAFE's predecessor, the State Industrial Accident Commission, was formed in 1914. And that was the first time that there was a requirement for certain employers to have workers' compensation insurance, and the state created SIAC, as the acronym goes, in order to provide that coverage. There was no requirement for all employees to be covered under workers' compensation until 1965. And at that time, the legislature did a couple of things. It made workers' compensation compulsory. Employers had to buy it, and with certain exceptions. And it also opened the market so that it was not only SAFE as the sole provider of workers' compensation insurance, but private insurers and large employers were able to qualify as self-insured employers and provide coverage for their own employees. And that situation, that status, continues today. There are three choices available to employers. For 15 years or so after that happened, SAFE operated as a traditional state agency. And by 1979, the governor and the legislature, Governor Attia at that time, felt that there were certain constraints on SAFE functioning in a competitive marketplace as a state agency, and a bill was introduced and passed the legislature to make SAFE a public corporation. SAFE may have been the first public corporation that was created by the legislature, and various sections of the statutes that otherwise applied to state agencies were made no longer to apply to SAFE Corporation. SAFE's continued as a public corporation for now almost, it'll be 25 years in 2005. We have a five-person board of directors. Those directors are selected and appointed by the governor, and they go before the state senate for confirmation. They are not related to SAFE as employees, although the statute does call for one or two of those members to be policyholders of SAFE. The other positions are public members, and they are otherwise citizens who are volunteers and give of their time and their expertise to help in the management of the corporation. We've had some transitions in our board of directors, and there were four members who left the board during 2004. Towards the end of last year, the governor appointed two new members, Matt Hennessy, who should be well known to you because he was the one who led the invocation or the prayers at the beginning of the ceremony in the Senate on Martin Luther King Day earlier this week. He wears a lot of hats. One of those hats was formerly as the administrator of the State Workers' Compensation Division, so he comes to SAFE with background in workers' compensation. And he is currently the CEO of a company by the name of QuickTrack, which is a SAFE-insured employer. The other new addition to the board is John Endicott, who for some time has been a business manager of the Plumbers and Steamfitters Local 290 in the Portland area. The continuing board member is John Anhorn, who is the president of Premier West Bank in Medford. And we have two other positions that are currently unfilled, and we're expecting the governor to make those appointments and send them forward to the Senate relatively soon. So as of today, we have three out of five board members.
Excuse me just a minute. Has this huge turnover in your board, foregone to new, affected you in any serious way, Brenda?
Mr. Chair, what it means, I think, is that there's obviously a steep learning curve, I think, in just getting up to speed on current operations at Safe Corporation and what has gone on, although, as you can tell from the background of the board members, they're familiar with workers' comp and business operations, but there will be, I think, a lot more meetings, a lot more lengthy meetings at the initial part of their term to just kind of get up to speed on the many things that have gone on with Safe Corporation over the past couple of years and where we're headed in the future. And one of the things I've talked to the board about that really, whether it would have been an old board or a new board, the time has come, I think, for Safe Corporation's board to sit down with Safe Management and have a discussion about where Safe Corporation should be going in the future. So once we get five board members, I anticipate having a strategic planning session and really having a discussion with the board about where Safe Corporation should go in the future.
Thank you. Continue, John. Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. SAFE is often confused with the workers' compensation system as a whole, and people often talk about their SAFE claim when in fact it's a claim that's filed with another insurance company. But SAFE is just one of, I forget the number now, but I think over 200 insurance companies that are licensed to sell workers' compensation in the state. As of the end of 2003, we had 42% of the market by premium volume. At the end of 2004, we had approximately 46,000 policyholders, and we're still doing the sums for 2004, and we don't have final figures for the year yet. But we estimate that the premium that will be paid to SAFE in 2004 will be in the neighborhood of $350 million. Our mission requires us to make coverage available and affordable to as many employers as possible, and that means that we have the lion's share of small business. And I think numbers that were produced last year show that we have something like 75 or 80% of the small businesses of the state are insured with SAFE. From that coverage, we get claims from injured workers. And last year, again, an estimate at this point is that we will receive something like 42,000 claims. Those go from simply a cut finger to far more serious injuries. They span quite a range of potential injuries. Those claims are received, processed, managed, and workers' compensation claims, as you probably know, have a long duration. We're still paying benefits today on a couple of claims that were filed before the Second World War. And so a claim today is a commitment that can go decades into the future. That's why we have approximately $3 billion in assets as of the end of the year in what is called the Industrial Accident Fund, which technically is a separate entity from SAFE Corporation, but is really like SAFE's bank account. And it's a trust fund established by the statute to pay benefits to workers over their lifetime.
There's something you just said. Maybe the committee's better educated than I am on this issue, but might be helpful for us. At some point, you say you've got a couple that they go back to before World War II. Did you say two? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You might sometime just share with us how much you've paid out in some of your biggest claims to date over the history of the corporation, and we might even want to compare that with some private companies, and some of you folks are listening, I think. What are some of the biggest claims that you've paid out over the years? That might be of help,
Mr. Chair,
to us.
We'd be happy to do that. I can tell you just off the top of my head that as we look at what is our most expensive claim from time to time, and I believe we have one claim that is reserved today for approximately $10 million. Obviously, most of that money is not yet spent, but we're predicting that over the life of that worker, it will cost $10 million to provide those benefits.
You tell us. You might put that in the context of what the injury was, what's the worker's situation, why it would be $10 million, et cetera. Okay?
We can provide you with that information, certainly. We are required to be fully funded for those losses, so that if we close the doors today, there would be enough money in our possession to be able to pay those benefits over the lifetime of the worker. And we are regularly audited. We often claim that we're the most audited entity in the state of Oregon because the Secretary of State audits us every year. The Insurance Division audits us regularly. It used to be every 3 years. It's a somewhat irregular schedule now. We hire our own actuarial consultants to make sure that we have the right amount of money. And those reports, those audits have consistently found that we have the appropriate sum to meet those future liabilities and to be able to stay in business. We believe that we've played an important part in making Oregon an attractive environment for business. The governor has recently reported that we are now the 42nd most expensive state out of 50, which is another way of saying we're actually the 8th lowest in cost to employers. But at the same time, we've also made a commitment, or the legislature has made a commitment, that the benefits that are paid to injured workers will be around the national median. So in some categories...
Is that
benefits,
the case?
Mr. Chair, that's what the legislature has used as a benchmark in the past, and when each session, when there are benefit increases proposed, the Workers' Comp Division comes forward with a study that shows how those benefits rank compared to other states.
Okay.
So we're sort of in the middle of the pack for benefits, but well below halfway point for employer costs. And just so that you're familiar with how many people work at SAFE, we have about 820 employees. The vast majority of those work in our Salem office. We have about 100 in our Portland office, where we service most of the small business clients. And then we have a number of other offices around the state, smaller offices that make up the balance of our employees. And if you have any other questions right now about SAFE in particular, I'd be happy to respond.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
And Brenda will speak about the content of Senate Bill 310.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as the committee well knows, the Interim Committee on General Government spent a great deal of time this past year talking about workers' compensation issues in general and SAFE Corporation in particular. And one of the, I think, the important pieces of work that the Interim Committee did was to come up with a number of principles that should govern workers' comp legislation. And as SAFE Corporation looked at those four principles, which I've set forth verbatim on page 2 of our testimony, SAFE Corporation agrees with all four of those principles and thought it appropriate, in light of this committee's work and also in light of the many controversial issues that have surrounded SAFE Corporation the past couple of years, to come forward with a bill that would address some of those issues. And that's really, I think, the reasoning behind Senate Bill 310 was to address the principles put forward by the Interim Committee and also to address some issues involving SAFE Corporation and really our commitment going forward to accountability and openness in the workers' compensation system. So let me go through the various sections of Senate Bill 310 at this point. And in my mind, I think I'm going to start with the what I believe to be the least controversial provisions and then move to what may be more controversial. I could be wrong on that, but this is my best guess as of today. Let me start then with SAFE's mission, statutory mission statement. That's actually in Section 4 of Senate Bill 310, and it's on page 3 of the printed bill. It has long been SAFE's statutory mission to make insurance available to as many Oregon employers as inexpensively as may be consistent with the overall integrity of the Industrial Accident Fund. And that statutory mission is, as the committee will note, is set forth in subsection B of ORS 656752. What has not been as clear in SAFE's statutory mission is really an express statement reflecting the importance of service to injured workers. So our proposal is to come forward and make some amendments to subsection C of ORS 656752 to make it clear that we not only manage claims filed by injured workers, which is essentially what the statute says now, but that it would also be our mission to commit to making prompt, fair, and ethical treatment of injured workers. So not just a statement of managing claims, but a statement of being prompt, fair, and ethical. And I think that is an important statement for the statute to make. It's consistent with our own internal mission statement for our claims division. We have a mission statement that provides that we will provide superior and innovative claim service built on a foundation of sound financial principles and ethical treatment of injured workers. We think it's important at this time for the statutory mission of SAFE to reflect that as well.
In other words, what you're saying is you've kind of had it more internally, but now we're going to make sure that it's explicitly stated in statute.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I think, again, that goes back to the interim committee's statement about, you know, accountability and transparency of the system so that particular statement about the treatment of injured workers is a statement. I think that's a statement about accountability, and I think it's an important statement.
Okay. I kind of have a two-part question, and some of you might see this as kind of mean and nasty, but does every other insurance company have this kind of statement?
Well, Mr. Chair, I can't speak to that. I'm not certain that other insurance companies do have that as a mission statement. I know SAFE does. I know SAFE statute should, but I can't speak to what other insurance companies have as a mission statement.
Excuse the sidebar, but the interesting thing here is that, in a sense, you're going to set a standard with this. And you can't force any other insurance company to meet that standard. But sometimes, especially if you control 42% of the market, as Chris talked about a while ago, it can kind of set the pace of the race, so to speak. I wish. At least allow me to be an idealist for a while, Senator Cynic. But the other part of it, and this is the other half of the question, is if you've now put in your statutory, you know, into statute your statement that you're going to receive and promptly, fairly, and ethically manage these, how do you think that may affect, well, as recently as today, you read the article in the newspaper and a newspaper column about the governor's policeman being rear-ended and kind of being, how should I say this, politically correct? He was kind of rear-ended by an IME, you know? Can we continue operations as it seems we have done in the past with this kind of a new statement of behavior? Do you understand what I'm driving at here?
I think I do, Mr. Chair, and let me just make these comments to that. First of all, to the first part of your question, I think, is SAFE Corporation should always set the standard. I think that's the value of being a public corporation, is that we should set the standard. The second part of your question is in terms of, does this, I think to some extent what you're saying is, does putting the mission statement change really the mission of SAFE Corporation? And I guess the answer to that directly is no, in the sense that, as I've said, that already is our internal mission statement. And I think what we're saying in terms of this statutory change is that we really are having the law then incorporate what our mission statement is. That doesn't mean that there won't be circumstances that come up, like the situation you've mentioned today, where somebody may say maybe there's a better way of doing particular cases, maybe there's a better way of working in the workers' comp system. And I think a good example of that is the interim committee heard a lot of testimony about IMEs. And that is certainly something that I think that we all in the industry, not just SAFE Corporation, but all of us need to work hard on. on during the coming session to see if there are improvements we can make to the workers' compensation system. So I think those two things go hand in hand. I think it's important to have a public statement by the legislature that the treatment of injured workers is a very important part of the system and a part of Safe Corporation. But I think we also have to recognize that every session and probably every interim session, there are things that we should continue to look at to improve the system for Oregon's injured workers.
Thank you. Unless there's other questions, let's continue. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Rocklin, you and Chris, when you were in my office the other day, I asked a question about this similar to the chair. Is there any additional liability relative to making a statement like that? And I would have hoped and was kind of shocked that, in fact, we didn't have a statement like that already, indicating that it is, in fact, in the interest of the state of Oregon to take proper care of injured workers. But the other thing I shared with you is the reputation in the past was that private carriers had, in fact, the case I shared with you, when we had an injured worker, the care was just unbelievable. I thought they went way beyond anything even expected to make sure that person was rehabbed and back to work and very satisfactorily compensated. Would you let everyone know what you said to me relative to any expected cost that could be incurred by making that statement or liability?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair George, I'm not certain exactly what you're directing me at. Obviously, I think this particular statement is important for all injured workers, and I think it's really a statement that probably should apply to the system as well, not just simply to Safe Corporation, that we should always treat injured workers fairly, ethically, and we should pay claims promptly. I think that's really an industry standard. And I think there are times, and I think this is maybe one of the things we talked about, is that there are certainly issues that don't involve Safe Corporation, involve other insurance companies who may not have treated injured workers in the way in which we wish they would be treated. But I think we also talked about the fact that there are times when simply taking a quick look at a claim, making the correct determination on that, and paying the claim promptly is maybe a better way to handle the case than to simply drag out litigation. Did I answer that?
I guess I'm right. Okay, follow up on that. And that was the question I asked that day in addition to that issue was, is there an implication from making that statement that we're going to provide ethical treatment to injured workers? Does that have any kind of legal ramifications as far as cost? I mean, I would support that no matter what, because I think that should just automatically be expected.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair George, I don't think so. One of the things is I've certainly learned, not just as a lawyer, but just as a person, is that you never want to probably say never, and I never know that there won't be litigation costs associated with almost anything you do. But I think the answer to that should be no, because it really should be the case that in the workers' comp system, we are treating injured workers fairly and ethically, and that we were promptly paying those cases and or those claims. And so to the extent, I'm not saying that in an individual case there may not be some costs associated with that in terms of making the claims promptly, but I think that's a cost the system should bear, because that just really should be a standard that we should all meet.
Thank you.
Go ahead, continue, Brenda.
The other section, I guess the next section I'd like to turn to in Senate Bill 310 is what I'm going to call budget oversight of Safe Corporation. And I'm going to talk about sections 1, 3, and 5 of the printed bill, because all three of those sections really deal with that particular issue. Right now, the way Safe Corporation does its budget is to actually work with the board of directors during the last quarter of the year to start putting together an operating and capital expenditure budget for the following year. And then at the end of the year, the very first part of the next year, the board of directors actually approves SAFE's operating budget. I would tell the committee that in the past 4 months, I think I've spent hundreds of hours on SAFE's budget and have been impressed with our process and the detail in which we go through that budget, both internally and as we will go through it with the board of directors. But I think there's been some issues have arisen the past year or so about whether the legislature should have more oversight of SAFE's budget, and I think this is kind of a middle ground to talk about ways that there can be oversight of SAFE's operating budget, but still not have it be a budget that goes through a legislative process like other state agencies. The having the flexibility to do a yearly budget approved by the SAFE Board of Directors, I think, really gives us the flexibility we need to actually run a business in addition to being a public corporation. And it's not, SAFE isn't unique in that sense. This committee probably knows that the Oregon State Lottery has a similar system where they do a one-year operating budget approved by the Lottery Commission, and that works well for the Lottery Commission as well. But we do have three recommendations to the committee that would provide for more budget oversight of SAFE's budget. And let me start with Section 1 of the bill. That would provide that the SAFE Board of Directors would be required to review and approve SAFE's annual budget. I've told you that that's been the practice in the past, but this would make it clear that that's a responsibility of the Board of Directors to actually review and approve that budget. In Section 3 of the bill, you'll note that we have in the past prepared an annual report to the legislature and the governor. We're proposing that you also ask SAFE or direct SAFE Corporation to include in the annual report information about SAFE's operating budget so that that would be available to the governor, the legislature, and the public. And our final recommendation on budget oversight is that you require the president of SAFE Corporation to appear at the request of the legislature, both in the interim and during the legislative session, to provide information about SAFE's budget and answer any questions the legislature may have regarding that budget. That, as many of the committee will recall, is a process, again, that I did while I was at the Oregon Lottery. I found it very helpful to hear what the concerns were regarding the lottery budget and to respond to questions that the legislature had regarding that budget. So I think in that way, SAFE Corporation, by doing the same thing, can ensure that we hear the concerns of the legislature regarding our budget and we give you enough information so that you know, as well as the Board of Directors, what we're spending operating money on in terms of our budget and our capital expenditures. Any questions about that?
Any questions? Senator George.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm just looking at this idea of the board controlling these issues, and I'm thinking back to 2001 and attempt by the legislature to get some, you know, ask a few questions and basically being put off and asking questions about lobbying and being put off, although we could sense there was an enormous amount of lobbying going on. And I know those folks. I really like those folks, but I didn't think they did it for free. And then there's a concern also about the fact that some folks seem to get a kind of a sweetheart deal for their association when others may have been deprived of that. Is that going to be completely open and transparent? Is that information going to be available under this scenario with the board?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair George, the answer to that is yes. That's one of the things that just has to occur, and I'm going to talk about that in more detail when I get to the other provisions that provide for more oversight by the Board of Directors. But I think a couple things need to occur in that openness and transparency. One, SAFE Corporation is accountable to the legislature, the governor, and the people of Oregon. And if we get a request to provide information to the legislature, we're going to provide that information. And I know in the past there have been some issues that have come up where we've said, well, we're not providing that particular document. We don't think it's a public record. Those days are over. If it's a public document, we're going to disclose it. The other thing I will tell you is that I think going forward, it is very important that the Board of Directors get specific information, particularly on contracts that have been controversial in the past in terms of lobbying, group contracts, advertising, public relations type of contracts. Those are the type of contracts that should come before the board of directors. And in a public discussion, much as we are doing today, the board has input and ultimately decides whether to enter into those contracts or direct staff then to go forward with those contracts. That process will fix many of the things that have been the problem in the past.
Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. That is exactly what I wanted to get on the record, that the board will not have the authority under this to say, oh, by the way, we're going to do executive session, and this is now confidential information. That will, in fact, be an open public meeting.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair George, yes, and I will talk a little bit later on about Section 7 of this bill that talks about executive sessions particularly, but under the law, and this is one of the sections of the bill that we're proposing that you would specifically provide, and let me just jump to that right now. It's actually in Section 1. Actually, it'd be Section 2 of the bill on page, I'm sorry, Section 3 of the bill on page 2. You see there's a new subsection 9 added that talks about meetings of the board of directors shall be held in compliance with the requirements of, and then there's some ORS citations. Those are citations to the Oregon public meetings laws. And I think it is important to make a statement that safe public meetings are governed by Oregon's public meetings law. And what that means is that there are very few exceptions to go into executive sessions. And really the two that come to mind, the two that are used periodically, one of them is to go into executive session to discuss pending litigation. And the second is to discuss confidential personnel issues. The board should not be going into executive session on other issues. And so unless you fit within the public meetings law, the discussion should be in public and should be heard by anybody who wants to come into the meeting.
Very good. Thank you.
Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question that I have, as we talked about budget oversight and safe budget and the changes that are proposed in this bill, and SAFE as a state agency, how, in your estimation, how are the changes that are in this bill, how do they differ than how would they differ from which the way that the legislature would address any other state agency? I mean, compare the changes here as how the legislature treats other state agencies, and really, I guess the bottom line question is, why should we treat SAFE differently?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I think for one key reason. SAFE Corporation, like some other entities, is clearly a public corporation, so that makes it different than a private business. So it's got that public side of it. But the other side of that is SAFE is a business that's in a competitive marketplace. And I think that means that the budget obviously has to be responsive to the marketplace. And it's something that it's just much easier, I believe, based on my experience at the Oregon Lottery and at SAFE Corporation, to run a business when you have the flexibility to do a one-year budget, look at what's going on in the market, and take account into all those factors that you really need to have the flexibility to do to actually be in a competitive marketplace. That's what sets SAFE Corporation and the Oregon Lottery in particular apart from other state agencies. And I think the fact that both of those entities have a one-year budget that goes through a board or commission is appropriate.
Senator Starr, are you satisfied? Okay. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I might as well ask it now because Ms. Rockland made reference to the contract issue. Can you just give me an update? You indicate that this bill would give the Board of Directors authority over the contracts, which it doesn't seem to have had before. In fact, it didn't even know about the existence of some of them. But can you give me an update on the contracts that you have now? Specifically, I'm interested in what's happening with the Victory Group contract and I don't know that every member of this committee is aware that that contract was extended at the end of last session, and it was extended by Mr. Tibbetts, and it was also extended without the benefit of a 30-day termination clause. So could you brief the committee, please, on that issue and where you are in terms of keeping that contract?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, specifically as to that contract, and I think I've had this discussion with the committee before, we're obviously in the process of reviewing all of the contracts and consulting with the Department of Justice on those contracts. But I will tell you, as to contracts that exist, Safe Corporation obviously has the opportunity to sit down and try to renegotiate terms of those contracts, but doesn't simply have the right to walk away from a contract without obviously there being legal expenses and costs associated with doing that. So as contracts have come due, the Board of Directors now plays a much more active role in the area of the types of contracts that have been controversial, like the lobbying, the group contracts, and the advertising contracts, that those actually then come before the board. The board has an opportunity to actually see the contract before it's signed and to have a discussion with Safe Management about whether that contract's a good idea or not.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Walker.
Thank you. I appreciate that answer, but it's kind of the same answer we got several months ago. And so you've indicated that you're in discussions with the Department of Justice, but it's been months, so I kind of want to know where you're at in those discussions without divulging client confidentiality. And those group contracts also, and I understand you're going to have the board have new authority, and I'm actually going to be dropping a bill this session that will kind of change things with regard to group contracts also, should it pass. So could you just tell me where you are in the discussions on those things?
I can, Mr. Chair, Senator Walker. What has happened, and if you... I didn't bring a copy with me today, but if you look at the agenda for the board meeting on Monday, you will see that there is one group contract involving health services group that will actually go before the board for approval at its January board meeting, so they will have a chance to look at the terms of that group contract and make a decision on going forward with that. I also tell you that contract would expire at the end of 2005, so it would be a yearly discussion with the board on that particular contract. As you may know, we have had a contract with Associated General Contractors for a number of years. That was a contract that actually came back before the board last fall, I believe in September, where the board had an opportunity to see the contract and have a discussion and authorize that contract to go forward. So we've started the process already. As contracts have come due, we've actually taken those back before the board without obviously waiting for a legislative change, but we've actually started that process. One of the other contracts I know we've had discussions about that quite frankly has been controversial is the AOI contract. And I will tell you that, again, that is a contract that doesn't expire until the end of 2005, but we are actively discussing that contract with AOI to see if there's some ability to make changes to that contract even before the expiration of that. And you will also see that as a board agenda item for the Monday board meeting, where we will begin a discussion with the Safe Board of Directors about the terms of the current contract and letting the Board of Directors know that we are actively trying to discuss the changing the terms of that contract with AOI.
Thank you, Ms. Rockman. Mr. Chair,
yes.
Would you allow me to direct Ms. Rockman to provide us with a list of all of their contracts and terms and expiration of terms? And which ones are currently being negotiated?
Brenda, would you have a problem with that?
Is that considered a trade secret?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, that is not a trade secret. And, in fact, we're actually planning to present this to the board on Monday as part of the budget, because I think the board needs to understand which group contracts we currently have and what the provisions of those are. So we have put together a chart that actually describes all of those group contracts, and it's kind of a summary provision of what they are. If the committee... wishes additional detail regarding those group contracts, I would be happy to provide it. And in fact, Senator Walker, in response to your question about are those contracts trade secrets, I will tell you that earlier today we turned over a copy of all of our current group contracts to Mr. DiLorenzo pursuant to a public records request, and certainly did not assert that those are trade secrets. They're available to Mr. DiLorenzo, to the public, and to the legislature.
Thank you, Ms. Ruckman. Mr. Chair,
yes.
I would like to comment that I was at the court hearing when Judge Lipscomb lowered his fine for Safe Corporation because they had been compliant with his order. Well, after the order they weren't compliant with. But there was an issue there, a remaining issue about which records were public and which were not, and I believe those were the dividend payments to the employer groups and actually just Safe Insureds. Are you still arguing about that issue, or have you decided that you will comply with the judge's opinion that is a public document and provide those?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, Safe Corporation is going to comply with the law. And so in terms of that particular issue, what you'll see attached to our testimony today is an opinion that was issued on January 7th from the Oregon Department of Justice about the two exceptions that apply to Safe Corporation in terms of public records, one claimant files and the other employer account records. And the Department of Justice had given us some fairly specific advice on what is an employer account record. And had further advised us that that information, if it fell within that category in ORS 656702, could not be disclosed. And it was really in that context that the attorneys in that case for Safe Corporation concluded that particular, not formulas which were released to OSEP, but that particular dividend amounts paid to particular employers fell within the category of employer account record. And what's going on right now is, I don't really want to describe it even as a dispute. I think, as I understand it from Safe's attorneys, they are going to continue to work with Mr. DiLorenzo to determine the remaining records that have not been turned over to get to an understanding of where the judge was going and what records fall within the exemption under the law and which records can be disclosed. And I guess I'm confident that the attorneys are going to be able to resolve that without going back to court.
All right. Well, thank you for updating us on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence.
Thank you. We're at times it seems we're heading down lots of paths at once, but we're getting there. Senator Sarnig.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just did like to go back just a couple of steps. You mentioned that and quoted in the bill on the new section 9 or the new paragraph 9 in section 3 of the bill on page 2 where the meetings of the board of directors will be held in compliance with ORS. This is the open meetings law. You mentioned specifically though that in executive session you mentioned two specific cases when the board would go into executive session. One was personnel matters, another one was
To discuss pending litigation. So if there's a pending lawsuit, and it's not just Safe, but any board's allowed to go into executive session to have a private conversation with its lawyer about that litigation.
Okay, well, I thank you for that. But having have access up here to the ORS and the executive session statutes are much broader than that. So are you saying that the SAFE board will limit itself to executive session only when it relates to personnel or litigation matters, or will you be governed by the statute?
Mr. Chair,
the statute's significantly broader.
Mr. Chair, Senator, sir, you're absolutely correct. It is significantly broader than that. But I think if you look at many of those other exemptions, when an agency can go into executive session, some of those are limited to what particular agencies can do. But I guess what my comment was there is that I think it's pretty rare to be able to go into to fit within any of those other exceptions. And so all I meant to suggest to the committee is that, and really, it's pretty much limited to the litigation exception that's usually used to go into executive session. But I guess our intent was, I guess to more directly answer your question, was to pick up the entire public meetings law and apply it to Safe Corporation. I think that's where Safe Corporation is today.
Okay, just one additional follow-up.
Go ahead,
Mr. Chair. One, as I read through this, there's one paragraph that caught my eye as it relates to SAFE. And again, SAFE is this interesting animal, for lack of a better word, that it doesn't fit in a lot of different definitions, I guess. I mean, what the public meetings law is about public agencies, I mean, and how they conduct business, local governments, cities, counties, the legislature for that matter. Mm-hmm. So SAFE, you know, using this as a basis to do its meetings is an interesting thing. But as I look at one particular paragraph that caught my eye as it relates to SAFE's business, and it seems to me that this creates a pretty huge, pretty large exemption for SAFE to do business under an executive session. And I'd just like to have your comment on that as you endeavor to really change the culture at SAFE Corporation. And that's it's paragraph G under the executive ORS 192.660. To consider preliminary negotiations involving matters of trade or commerce in which the governing body is in competition with governing bodies of other states or nations. I'm just looking at that's a trade and commerce kind of statement, and it just seems to be that that's a pretty large door. So just a comment on that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I guess that very good question. And I think my quick read of that is that I guess I probably focused on the end of that particular exemption because certainly the first part of that where you talk about matters of trade or commerce would apply to SAFE Corporation, but I think it's really the back of that where it says in competition with governing bodies in other states or nations. I'm not certain that, and I haven't looked at the Department of Justice manual on that, but I'm not certain that that would necessarily apply to SAFE Corporation.
Well, and that's my point, Mr. Chair, because SAFE is a state agency that's involved in commerce, and this is really written to address local governments.
I think that's right.
And so in some respects, could you equate that other governing bodies as your competition? If it's a local government versus a local government, is it SAFE versus its competitive or its competition? So that's, to me, if you read this in the way that I think that SAFE wants to operate today, you know, this is directly related to the what kinds of issues you're going to discuss in executive session.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I'd be happy to get back to you on that because I think my guess is the Department of Justice may very well have interpreted that particular provision. I suspect it doesn't probably apply to SAFE Corporation, partly because as if you look at the printed bill on page 8, the new subsection N that would be added to the public meetings law in terms of when you can go into executive session, that I would just tell the committee it did not come from SAFE Corporation, but it did come from the committee, would then allow SAFE to go into executive sentence to consider sensitive matters concerning proprietary interests not customarily provided to competitors of the corporation. And I guess I'm assuming that that would not have been added if we, in fact, could have fit within one of the other exemptions in that statute, although I'm not 100% certain about that, and I hear your concern, and we'll get back to you on that. That, you know, that particular new provision in Section 7 of the bill is similar to what applied to the Oregon Health Sciences University and allowing them to go into executive session. That's, again, not something that SAFE Corporation put forward in this bill, but I think it is something that this committee may want to consider. You know, I've covered, I think, some of the other, most of the oversight issues by the Board of Directors. Let me just summarize that quickly and see if there's any additional questions. It really is oversight in a couple of areas that we've talked about. One in the area of contracts and just making certain that the Board of Directors is looped in on particular contracts by statute and then any contracts that the Board wishes. And that would include group contracts. The Board would have some say over lobbying activities and how that's conducted and how we report those expenses. And the board also then would have control over any bills that would be introduced in the name of the corporation. Let me, because I know you want to get to Mr. DiLorenzo, and I, of course, want to give him that chance. Let me just turn to, I think the final part of the bill that will generate some controversy, at least between Rockland and DiLorenzo, I believe. and that is the area of public records. And we've talked a little bit to the interim committee about that, but let me just make a couple comments about the public records section of the bill, which is really sections 2 and 6. Where Safe Corporation is today is that we really have two public records laws that apply to Safe Corporation. One is in Chapter 192, the Public Records Act, that applies to all public entities, including Safe Corporation. The other is a Safe-specific statute, ORS 656702, that applies only to Safe Corporation and provides that all of our records are open to public inspection with two exceptions. One, claimant files, and two, employer account records. If you can't fit within those two exceptions, every record at Safe Corporation is open to public inspection under 656702. And that, the fact that those two provisions are out there and they're two separate provisions was really clarified by the Oregon Court of Appeals in the OSEP case, which I've cited in our testimony. What we're proposing in Senate Bill 310 is that Safe Corporation, really as a matter of public policy, should be no different from any other public entity in terms of the public records law. And that would mean that employee records for Safe Corporation would be protected just as they are for all other public employees in Oregon. Security information would be protected. Those type of exemptions would apply to Safe Corporation just as they do to all other public agencies. And I think really mostly as a matter of public policy, I just think it doesn't make sense that Safe Corporation in the public records area should be treated differently than any other public agency. But let me give a few more reasons why I also think that's good public policy. When you take a look at the two types of public records law, the records that a person gets under the two different statutes is somewhat different. So if a member of the public makes a request of Safe Corporation under Chapter 192, the Public Records Act, they may get a different set of records, arguably, than someone would get if they made a request for records under ORS 702. That doesn't seem to me to be good public policy. The other thing that I think makes it sense to go under the Public Records Act for Safe Corporation is really the process that applies. And if you take a look at the Public Records Act, what happens if a citizen asks an agency for public records and the agency refuses to disclose those records, the citizen can petition the Attorney General and have the Attorney General intervene in whether the agency gives up those records. That's a very simple process. It's a petition that any citizen can fill out. There's no filing fee. And the citizen then can simply ask the Attorney General to make certain that the agency has given up everything that should be given up. Under the Safe Public Records Act, what happens is you go directly to court. So if you file a petition under 656702 and you disagree with Safe Corporation, the avenue for the citizen or the lawyer is to go directly into circuit court and have a discussion with the judge about whether Safe has complied with the public records law. And that process is more complex, it's more expensive, and I think in many cases the citizen, to be able to do that, in all likelihood probably needs a lawyer. And it's for all of those reasons that I think it just makes sense to attach SAFE to the public records law and have that process go forward. I think, and process-wise, I'm not sure, at the last time we talked, Mr. DiLorenzo and I talked to this committee, he said he'd be willing to consider the process issue, so that we may have some common ground there. I think the controversy comes about, and I think even Mr. DiLorenzo, as I understand it, agrees that SAFE should have more exceptions under the public record, under its own public records law than it has now. And I think we can reach agreement that, that employee records and security plans and those type of things should be protected. Where the controversy is, Mr. Chair, because this is the question you asked me to address early on, is really whether all of the exemptions in the Public Records Act should apply to Safe Corporation. And I think specifically it's the trade secret section that I think is, will generate some controversy. So I think we should talk about that, but really I think that the committee should strongly consider making SAFE a part of the Public Records Act and just picking up those processes so that citizens in Oregon know that there's one process, there's one procedure, and you get the same records no matter what agency you go to. And with that, I would be, one other thing before I turn it over to questions, I touched quickly on the on a couple of the provisions in Senate Bill 310 that did not come from Safe Corporation. One of them was the exemption on the going into executive session for public meetings. The other one is changing the board membership from 5 to 7. And not really taking a position on that, but that I guess doesn't prevent me from saying a couple things. And that's just that I think really based on my experience as a PERS board member at Safe Corporation, at the lottery, I think a 5-member board works. And it doesn't mean 7 doesn't work as well, but I would just tell you 5 works. And I will also tell you that to the extent we've had issues in the last 2 years, I don't think it was because of the size of the board. It was because of all of the other issues we've talked about today. So with that, I'd open it up for questions and be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Actually, Brenda, I'm going to ask you folks to step back because Senator Starr does have another meeting and he has to leave at 4:30. I want to give John a chance to start and then we can follow with some more questions. Is that okay, Senator Starr?
Yes.
And we'll hold our questions that we might have till a little bit later. Is that okay, Senators?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. We just want to know what the source of the change was from the 5-member to 7-member board. I don't know who proposed that.
Let's wait until Judith comes back and we can ask that question. John, welcome to the committee.
I've been trying to find
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry that one of our members is ill today, Senator Verger. I'm sure that you and Brenda both will have a chance to kind of update her.
Another notebook.
Huh? I'm sorry,
another notebook.
Another notebook, yeah.
I am.
Another notebook. Must be John DiLorenzo's here today.
I have
today.
3 of these already.
I'm hoping that you'll dedicate a portion of your bookshelf to my various notebooks.
I see.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John DiLorenzo. I'm a partner with the law firm of Davis Wright Tremaine. As you know, many members of my firm and I have litigated a number of cases relating to Safe Corporation and have several pending. In particular, we have spearheaded an effort to gain access to documents once protected by Safe as trade secrets to provide the public with some insight as to how this public agency operates. I am here today on behalf of Oregonians for Sound Economic Policy. OSEP is opposed to Senate Bill 310 in its entirety. Our opposition to the bill is generally based upon the following observations, and I would like to take my time to talk about those observations, those being SAFE's transparency, public relations contracts, and how they're treated under Senate Bill 310, and group contracts. Chairman, members, far from furthering the goal of transparency, this bill makes Safe Corporation opaque. Section 2 and other provisions of the bill reinstate the veil of secrecy which once surrounded Safe Corporation. As you know, my client's quest for Safe documents began in January of 2000 when Safe made a request for documents, when OSEP made a request for documents relating to dividend payments, the extent of the surplus, and SAFE's political activity. In April of that year, based upon the public records law, SAFE demanded a $65,000 advance fee in order to process our request and made it clear that it would withhold the documents which OSEP really wanted to review based on trade secrets anyway, but only after we paid the $65,000. In July of 2000, OSEP filed a suit in Marion County Circuit Court to require production of the documents. And in March of 2001, Judge Lipscomb ruled in OSEP's favor and declared that SAFE could not rely on trade secrets or other public records exemptions to shield its documents from review. This was based upon the court's view that the public records law was not the sole vehicle for gaining inspection of SAFE's records, and that Chapter 656 contained its own particular inspection provision, giving the public the right to inspect the records. In April 2001, SAFE appealed Judge Lipscomb's decision. In June of that year, Judge Lipscomb ordered SAFE to conduct a full and faithful review of its records, to produce those records for which no exemption applied, and to keep track of those withheld on a separate log pending review. In May of 2003, the Oregon Court of Appeals affirmed Judge Lipscomb's decision. SAFE thereupon petitioned to the Oregon Supreme Court. On October 2, 2003, the Oregon Supreme Court declined SAFE's petition to review, and on October 7, 2003, OSEP demanded production of all of the documents withheld by SAFE. Between October and November of 2003, which was more than 3 years after our original request, SAFE supplied many of the documents for our review. Among those documents were evidence of Mr. Goldschmidt's $40,000 per month contract with SAFE. In addition to those documents relating to Mr. Goldschmidt's contract, other documents were unearthed, among which were documents disclosing a large severance agreement with one of SAFE's executives, large payments to a public relations firm for engaging in strategic advertising designed to influence legislators, and documents shedding light on the relationship which SAFE maintained with several trade organizations. All documents which SAFE intended to withhold based on trade secrets and other exemptions under public records law, and in particular the group contracts which SAFE withheld based upon trade secrets. In May and early June of 2004, a former high-ranking official at SAFE came forward and alleged that he had been ordered to destroy and reclassify documents in order to keep them from public view. This disclosure gave rise to the contempt proceeding, which we litigated between June and August of last year, and which culminated in the Circuit Court holding SAFE Corporation in contempt and assessing the largest fine ever assessed against a state agency in the history of the state. Judge Lipscomb's order and finding on contempt is attached to your materials at page 3 for your review at a later time. His Honor's findings recount activities at SAFE which were symptomatic of a management culture there, a culture which permitted wholesale destruction of emails and other documents by a former chief executive officer. Since that time, the management at SAFE Corporation has once again changed. Ms. Rockland has been appointed SAFE's third president and CEO within the span of 1 year. In addition, with one exception, the entire board of directors of SAFE Corporation has been replaced. Under Ms. Rockland's supervision, SAFE Corporation has purged itself of contempt, in my view. She and Ms. Seelock and others have done an excellent job, in my view, complying with the court's orders. And with one exception, has abided by all of the orders of the court. That one exception relates to Senator Walker's question, and it pertains to a recent instruction by Judge Lipscomb for SAFE Corporation to disclose documents in SAFE's possession which detail premiums paid by various of its insureds and dividends received in exchange. My client is of the opinion that SAFE Corporation has for years utilized its dividend policy in a predatory way, discriminating among policyholders and favoring certain industries and segments over others. Obviously, those lists would be very useful to determine whether dividends have been distributed in a discriminatory fashion. It is my understanding, however, that as of this time, SAFE does not intend to comply with Judge Lipscomb's instructions. Instead, SAFE...
Excuse me, John. I just want to ask, what do you mean in a discriminatory fashion?
Mr. Chair, my client believes, based on information it has received over the years, that the dividend that is provided to a particular insured has little basis and little relationship to its loss history and has very little relationship to the manner in which it runs its business or to the amount of the premium that is paid. For instance, some segments receive dividends well in excess of 12% of dividends paid. Other insureds receive dividends approximately 4% of premiums paid. And there was a significant disparity with respect to the manner in which dividends were distributed. It is our view that SAFE in the past had used its dividend policy in order to attempt to corner various segments of the market. And so, of course, we are very interested in getting to the bottom of this, and we felt that the documents which SAFE maintains, lists of premiums paid and dividends received, would be useful in helping us determine whether there was any statistical disparity with respect to the manner in which dividends were distributed. SAFE is resisting providing that information. I should also say that Judge Lipscomb is aware of the Attorney General's opinion, which Ms. Rockland referenced. That opinion was presented to His Honor during the last hearing. His Honor's opinion is notwithstanding the Attorney General's opinion that SAFE should turn over those documents. And Mr. Gary and I are currently jousting, to use the chair's term, to attempt to work out a resolution. But at this point, it is our understanding that SAFE does not intend to comply with those instructions and will likely appeal unless we can work something out. So, Mr. Chairman, if you approve Senate Bill 310 at SAFE's request, it is our view that the public will take a major step backwards, overturning the rule in Oregonians for Sound Economic Policy versus SAFE and returning to the days when SAFE could assert trade secrets and other exemptions to shield its records from review. Now, what type of records would SAFE keep from public inspection if this bill passes? Certainly, its contracts and relationships with trade groups could be shielded once Ms. Rockland is no longer at SAFE Corporation. I take her at her word that she would provide that information. But if you change the law based on Senate Bill 310, her successor may not be so generous. In addition, politically embarrassing material, including documents drafted by SAFE staff members leading up to agency decisions, would be kept from public view. But those aren't the only documents which would be kept from the public. Any document which SAFE Corporation would rather the public not see could be shielded from public inspection if SAFE was permitted to assert its own trade secrets. Now, I have appended at tab 4 of your documents one such example of those materials. Tab 4 is a page that was excerpted from an interoffice memorandum to Catherine Keene from SAFE's marketing manager. The document generally analyzes market dynamics impacting Oregon's small business. Of great interest, though, is a statement at the top of the memorandum, which says, "This memorandum is confidential and exempt from public disclosure pursuant to ORS 192.501 and 192.660, the very sections which SAFE is proposing in Senate Bill 310 to reconnect to." Now, the document, which SAFE evidently designated as exempt from disclosure under the public records law, is fairly innocuous. It analyzes market trends, private carrier activity, and SAFE's role vis-a-vis other carriers. This document is obviously not the type which should be shielded from the public. Another type of document, though, is appended to tab 5. This document is the beginning of a memorandum dated November 8, 2002, from SAFE's chief actuarial officer to its board of directors and executive council. It is entitled Attack Benchmarks and covers four areas in which SAFE might be vulnerable to attack, including incurred but not reported reserves, combined ratios, investment income, and policyholder dividends. It also has a legend at the top that says exempt from public disclosure pursuant to ORS 192.501, 192.660, and 40.225. Mr. Chairman, if an agency seeks to criticize its own operations or defend its operations from criticism, its handiwork should be available to the public. Yet this is also the type of embarrassing document which SAFE sought to withhold from public disclosure under the very public records law which SAFE now seeks to reconnect to. Public agencies should not be permitted to deprive the public of access to their records by merely placing a stamp or a legend on them. Of course, under the rule in Oregonians for Sound Economic Policy, SAFE cannot shield these documents from public review. But if Senate Bill 310 passes, it will be able to do so. Now, Ms. Rockland may elect not to, but it would be able to do so.
Let me say that we're in a subcommittee mode. I don't know where Senator Walker went, but...
I understand.
I did ask Senator Starr when he left if he had any problem with you continuing, and he certainly doesn't. But my thinking here is that we may want to ask you to come back to answer some questions when Senator Starr is here. This is pretty important stuff that you're doing. I hate to do it in subcommittee form, but yes, Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. With that same thought in mind, I had requested that we all receive a DVD of the full proceedings today, so we'll have a record of everything that's been said.
Okay.
So that might be available to Senator Verger.
It'll be Senator Verger and others as they missed it.
That's wonderful, Mr. Chairman, and I would be delighted to come back any time to answer further questions.
Okay.
And I know you have my bills.
I think that'll happen with everybody. I mean, this is the beginning of a very long process here, but I don't want to interrupt you if you're sharing some important stuff with us. So continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These provisions of Senate Bill 310...
Where are you, incidentally?
I am on page 5 of my testimony.
Page 5, okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, these provisions of Senate Bill 310 hardly comport with the Senate Interim Committee on General Government's Statement of Workers' Compensation Principles. In that statement, the committee resolved to increase the transparency of state workers' compensation system operations by ensuring the proper application of the public records and contracting laws. This bill does not further that end. Again, it makes SAFE opaque, not transparent. Now, as you know, my client offered a compromise to SAFE during the closing days of the 2003 legislative session when this case was pending in the Supreme Court. The compromise would have protected SAFE's security and personnel information of its employees while entitling the public to still inspect other business records. SAFE rejected that proposal out of hand. The compromise contained within another bill and is introduced at your request. It's there. We offer it again, notwithstanding the fact that we prevailed in the Supreme Court. We commend it to your consideration as excellent public policy. We have no interest in examining the computer codes or safe security measures or finding out personal information with respect to its employees.
Despite all your work on it, we haven't got that one back from counsel yet.
Mr. Chair, I understand it is still at legislative counsel.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Now, Mr. Chair, SAFE asks, why should it be treated differently from other agencies that have the right to protect trade secrets? Well, in the first place, Chapter 192 is a baseline for a minimum level of disclosure by state agencies. The court recognized that the legislature can always expect an enhanced level of transparency from some agencies. Second, a higher level of transparency is required of SAFE, given the way SAFE operates. Most agencies utilize the trade secrets exception to the public records law to protect private information that is submitted by private parties to the agencies for the purpose of regulation. Few agencies have trade secrets of their own. Unlike most agencies, SAFE has a history of abuse of the trade secrets exception for the purpose of hiding its own documents. This makes SAFE fairly unique. In addition, unlike most agencies, the legislature has absolutely no budget oversight over SAFE. Given the absence of budgetary controls, enhanced transparency is, in our view, essential. In addition, SAFE's history of systematic destruction of public records, which resulted in the trial court's finding of contempt, mandates this result. The court has recently imposed a $700,000 fine on SAFE Corporation as a result of those transgressions. I am aware of no other example in which a state agency has committed such an egregious breach of court orders. No matter what the ultimate outcome, SAFE should be kept on some semblance of probation, even as the new management takes control. I am confident that Ms. Rockland intends to run SAFE Corporation in the public interest. I have absolutely no doubt of that. However, we should not be dependent upon the good graces of those who occupy offices such as Ms. Rockland to make us those assurances. Those guarantees, Mr. Chairman and members, should be provided in the law. Now, my client also opposes this bill because it does absolutely nothing to bring accountability back to SAFE Corporation. Most of the provisions contained within Section 1 are little more, with all due respect, are little more than window dressing. Even if they had been part of the current law, they would have done little to prevent the abuses which were uncovered during the course of our litigation.
John, I just want to say happily that we're a full committee again and wanted that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So let's take a moment now to talk about SAFE's use of public relations firms and whether this bill, had it been enacted before, would have made any difference. Section 1, sub 2 of the bill requires the Board of Directors to review and approve all contracts for public relations or lobbying services. Of course, one could argue that Neil Goldschmidt's $40,000 per month contract would likely not have been approved had the Board of Directors known about it. I will assume that. However, there is nothing to suggest that Gardner Gerber's fairly open-ended public relations contract would not have been approved. At tab 6, I have attached a March 12, 2001 memo from Gardner Gerber to Safe Corporation and its advisors. As you can see, Safe was paying for numerous parties to meet directly with Safe policyholders, encouraging them to contact specific legislators relating to specific bills affecting Safe Corporation. On the second page of that exhibit, the messages were to be developed and were to be used by Neil Goldschmidt in speeches and board sessions during his trips around the state of Oregon. Other Safe communications plans through 2004 are also attached at tab 7, and they show how much of what Safe did in the realm of advertising was directed to you. Tab 8 is a copy of documents prepared by Safe Corporation listing specific policyholders and the representatives and senators they were to approach. Attached to tab 9 is a copy of a bill alert paid for by Safe Corporation and directed to particular members of the legislature with respect to specific legislation. Tab 10 illustrates another example of Safe Corporation paying PR firms to approach policyholders for the purpose of pressuring members of the Legislative Assembly. Most egregious, however, is tab 11, a letter designed to accompany dividend payments to policyholders and warning the recipients of that the possibility of future dividends is under attack. Safe in that letter that accompanies the dividend check requests the support of parties who have received their dividend checks to resist legislation and states that their support will be essential in the months ahead. Safe also paid its public relations company to draft opinion pieces for Safe policyholders to sign and to thereby manipulate public opinion. One such piece is appended at tab 12. It was written by Gardner Gerber, paid for by Safe, and it was designed to be signed by Mr. John Egge. And it was entitled, Safe is Doing Exactly What It Should Be Doing, Keeping Rates Low. This opinion piece was, in fact, published in the Oregonian. Tab 13 shows more of the public relations firm's handiwork, specifically a draft letter prepared at the same time as the draft for Mr. Egge to sign, complimenting Mr. Egge on his opinion piece, and designed to look like a spontaneous showing of support that would mysteriously emerge in the Oregonian right after reading Mr. Egge's public opinion piece.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Joel.
I would like to report that both of those who were assigned to contact me did.
Run that by me again.
I would like to report that both of the organizations that were assigned to contact me had, in fact, done that.
He's back at tab 8.
Now, okay. I was trying to keep up with John, so I didn't leaf through all the tabs. So thank you.
Your name is there.
Now, I'll get there.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, tab 14 consists of further examples, but most daring are the examples at tab 15.
Maybe I should ask you to slow down so I can get there.
Right. I'd like you to turn to tab 15, if you would.
Okay.
Safe paid its public relations firm to draft letters to the editor to be signed by Safe policyholders and supporters questioning the motives of a member of this very committee, Senator Walker. And that letter to the editor, drafted by Gardner Gerber, paid for by Safe Corporation, begins, quote, I have to wonder if Representative Vicki Walker's constant attacks against Safe are legitimate. And goes further. Now, finally, at tab 16 is a chart prepared by Safe's public relations firm, which shows the manner by which Safe placed its generic advertising. And I'd like to just look at that. The chart lists several members of the legislature. Let's take Representative Butler, for instance. It says Representative Butler, District 60, wants to privatize Safe. It lists his newspapers. And the strategy is editorial interview over the phone or pitch an article about Safe insuring the local school district. The school district office is right across the street from Mr. Butler's office. Butler will not change his mind about Safe, but it would be good to pitch articles, editorials to other papers in his district. Similarly, there is a strategy for Representative Gardner, Representative Kafuri, Representative Canope, Representative Krupp, Representative Merkley, Senator Beyer. Safe observes that he is the chair of the Senate Business and Labor Committee. He likes dividends, but he is a free market advocate. So evidently Safe needs a strategy, public relations-wise, to deal with him. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it is clear that state agencies should not be gained in public opinion manipulation and practices designed to pressure members of the Legislative Assembly. And I want to depart from my testimony for just a second. Substitute another agency for SAFE. Let's say that the Department of Motor Vehicles is upset because one of you happens to be stingy with their budget. What if the Department of Motor Vehicles took lists of licensed drivers arranged by zip codes and then further arranged them as to which legislative districts they lived in? And what if the department then sent letters to those licensed drivers complaining that they will not have sufficient funds to fix potholes on specific streets nearby those licensed drivers unless one of you changes your view regarding the Department of Transportation's budget? I imagine you would be outraged if a public agency was manipulating opinion and engaging in these types of grassroots activity, yet SAFE did it all the time.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator George.
We were outraged when that exact plan was developed. If you remember back, I believe, 97, 98, 99, we were dealing with that issue. And they did do those kind of things, and we expressed our outrage, which should have been clear to anyone else, but that kind of activity was not going to be entertained. And in fact, I have the big booklet. You guys remember what Senator Shannon was able to expose. And I think it's really clear that maybe today we send a very clear letter that this is the end of this stuff.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it is clear that state agencies should not be engaged in this type of public opinion manipulation and practices to pressure members of the Legislative Assembly. What is there in Senate Bill 310 that would have in any way prevented more of the same? The answer, of course, is absolutely nothing. All right, let's talk for a moment about SAFE's group contracts. The same can be said for provisions in Section 1.3 of the bill, which states that the Board of Directors of SAFE may not approve contracts with groups or trade associations that are not supported by sound business and insurance principles. Now, I have appended portions of the current group contract between SAFE and Associated Oregon Industries Service Corporation at page or at tab 17. And if you could just turn to the second page of that exhibit. That contract, which is dated December 9, is the current AOI Service Corporation contract, and it provides that AOI receives payments from SAFE in four categories. First, AOI gets a fee for loss prevention in the amount of $210,000 per year. Now, this is the association itself, or its service corporation, not the members of the group. So it gets $210,000 a year for loss prevention. It also gets a management fee of $30,000 per year. It gets miscellaneous payments, and then it receives from SAFE, for distribution of AOI's Business Viewpoint magazine, $19 annually for each plan member who receives the Business Viewpoint magazine. Well, you've all seen Business Viewpoint magazine. It is a very well-produced, very well-written, glossy magazine providing very few pages devoted to workplace safety and significant pages devoted to AOI's political and economic messages. Ironically, many messages with which I agree. Tab 18 is an example of just how lucrative this contract is for AOI. The invoice attached to that tab, dated January 21, 2003, shows that that year AOI billed SAFE Corporation $336,222 to produce and distribute AOI Business Viewpoint magazine. In my testimony of September 15, 2004, before your interim committee, I showed how SAFE had artificially increased the amounts paid to AOI for publication of Business Viewpoint in part to make up for elimination of the controversial dividend bonus program, which AOI benefited from in prior years. During that testimony, I showed how SAFE Corporation believed that it benefited AOI not only financially, but by being responsible for a good share of AOI's membership. At tab 19, I have reappended a table showing SAFE payments to AOI, and at tab 20, an email in which Ms. Keene states, quote, You and I both know, of course, that many businesses became AOI members in order to get the lowest net cost insurance. Now, in addition to paying for distribution of its magazine, and according to SAFE, being responsible for a significant amount of AOI's membership, SAFE also pays to advertise in the very publication which SAFE in large pays for. SAFE is by far and away AOI's largest advertiser. SAFE's financing of AOI's magazine also allows AOI to generate pure profit from its other advertisers. In all, SAFE directly paid to AOI Service Corporation from July 96 through June 2001 the sum of $4,191,905. Is it any wonder why AOI has led the charge to defend SAFE Corporation in the legislature and in the public arena? Of course, this particular contract has gained the notice of the press and the public. I think Ms. Rockland mentioned that it has become controversial. Many believe that state agencies should not treat any group with preference over any others. Many believe that the state has no business paying any organization, no matter what its ilk, money for the purpose of allowing it to propagate its particular political message. But that is exactly what SAFE Corporation has been doing. Now, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, is this contract that I have just described supported by, quote, sound business and insurance principles, unquote? Is it one which would not be permitted if Senate Bill 310 was enacted? I believe this question should be posed directly to SAFE Corporation before this committee considers enacting the language proposed in that bill. If the language in Senate Bill 310 were the law today, would SAFE Corporation be able to engage in the same contract? If the answer is yes, then the language is not effective and is window dressing. If the language is no, then SAFE Corporation should be renegotiating this contract right now. Now, in my testimony before your interim committee, I asked you to consider controlling SAFE's political activity. I asked that SAFE should discontinue its practice of hiring outside lobby organizations, much like the arguments that were made for the Oregon Department of Transportation, as Senator George has referenced several years ago. Because it is an agency of the government, I suggested that it should refrain from meddling with the initiative process. I suggested that it immediately cease its practice of attempting to rally its customers in key legislative districts to provide constituent pressure on you whenever the issue and the subject of SAFE Corporation comes up. I suggested that it should put an end to paying public relations firms large sums to draft op-ed pieces and nasty letters to the editor about legislators with whom it disagrees. And finally, I asked that it substantially alter its arrangements with certain trade organizations to ensure that no organization is given preferential treatment in exchange for political support. Now, on a later date, Ms. Rockland appeared before your interim committee. When asked about these suggestions, she stated that many of them would be considered during SAFE's top-to-bottom review and generically concurred with some, not all, but some of the suggestions. And I appreciated that. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 310 does nothing to further those suggestions, nor does it do anything to further the statement of principles, which was carefully prepared by your interim committee. The public would be better off without this bill. I urge you and your members to wait until you have a full menu of legislative proposals concerning SAFE Corporation. Only then will you have an opportunity to truly consider the various tools at your disposal. But to the extent that you enact legislation, the legislation should be directory in and of itself. It should not rely on the goodwill of those who direct the agency. Mr. Chairman, I have great confidence in Ms. Rockland's sincerity. What I doubt is whether she can truly break the culture that is present at SAFE. I believe only a law can do that. Mr. Chairman, members, I truly appreciate your time and interest. I am available to answer any questions which may be posed by members of your committee.
John, I want to thank you for your testimony. What I'm going to do at this moment is I'm going to hold questions for both you and Ms. Rockland until I can get the rest of the committee back here. I hope before that time that Senator Verger will be able to listen to today's testimony so that we can all start together. Before Senator Starr left, he said that he was going to, you know, continue reading this even though he had to leave the room. So I'm going to ask that we all come prepared for kind of round two of this boxing match. And I would encourage Brenda to be prepared item by item to respond to this stuff. At the same time, we may have some tough questions for you. In fact, there's a couple that are written before me that my committee administrator will bring to my attention when that occurs. With that, I'm going to ask that you step back, and I'm going to give, and we've only got a few minutes before closing. A gentleman arrived a little bit late from the Injured Workers Alliance, Ernest Damasio. I'm going to just give you 5 minutes. Okay?
Mr. Chairman.
And thank you, John. You come from the Injured Workers Alliance. Would you state your name for the record, please?
Chairman Shields, members of the committee, my name is Ernest Damasio. I'm executive director of Injured Workers Alliance, or an injured worker advocacy group. In regards to Senate Bill 310, we have no position. We're very interested in the legislation proposed by Attorney DiLorenzo to compare the two. I did, first of all, I hadn't planned on testifying. I was actually here for the earlier committee involving another issue. In regards to, we would support an increase of board of directors of SAFE to from 5 to 7 members. We would hope, though, and possibly this committee could enforce that there be an injured worker representative as one of those additional board members. I might note that Endicott, of course, is union. Before him, AFSCME's Ken Allen was a SAFE board of director, but we like unions, but they only represent in the neighborhood of 25% of all workers. We know a proposal similar to this has been in regards to MLAC committee. So we would like to see a worker advocate, at least, that isn't union on the SAFE's board. As far as SB 310, I mean, it appears there is adequate protection for injured workers' information getting out to the public. We're concerned about that simply because of a incident involving workers' comp division where injured workers' claims history were given to a third-party contractor and was actually shared with numerous employers. Essentially, workers were who applied for work, pre-employment screening, their actual work records, injury records, were out there to be seen. And we know it resulted in discrimination. We have proof of it. So we would like to see adequate protections to prevent example, SAFE using a third-party contractor. We would want to make sure that similar restrictions were in place so that that contractor couldn't divulge information that SAFE says it wouldn't. That's all I had to say. Thank you very much. I'm available for any questions you may have.
Well, I hope that you'll continue to follow us, and we may have some questions for you as we get down the road. Okay? Yeah. But if it's okay with you, I'd like to adjourn the committee unless there's some questions that you really want to push in.
Just one, Mr. Chair. I would like explanation on this. We can do it at the next hearing, but I would like more discussion about this.
This was the SAFE Corporation Group program profile. We want to talk for a little bit, and I thought about this at the time, about the difference between commission and fee in column 6 out of the 7 columns that you have there and what that's all about. Okay? Okay. And with that, I'm going to adjourn the committee. Thank you.
Do you know whether the list that John is